This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Marketplace is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
We have come to the last working day of President Obama's first term, which started on a Tuesday 4 years ago with a simple idea. Hope. Hope that better days were to come. It's an idea he repeated the night he was reelected.
You can make it here in America if you're willing to try.
So as we get set for the next 4 years, this question, can you still make it in America? From American Public Media today in the president's hometown of Chicago, Illinois, this is Marketplace.
Balance your life with dollar signs. Tune into Marketplace Money this weekend for a look at the issues affecting your wallet. Whether it's investing, renting an apartment, or sending your kid off to college, we'll help you navigate.
This is the Marketplace Podcast for Friday, the 18th of January. Good as always to have you with us. We're in Chicago today for a special broadcast with Inauguration Day almost upon us. It has been, a lot of people will tell you, a long first Obama term. Yes, the unemployment rate is well off the 10% it used to be. And yes, the economy has actually been growing for more than 3 years now. But numbers don't mean anything to people who still feel like they're stuck in a recession where the path to the middle class and economic security and even the idea of economic security can sometimes seem, well, impossible. So Chicago, where the Obama presidency started, we are broadcasting today on the theme of wealth and poverty from the National Public Housing Museum. It's a place where the perils and the promise of America can be seen and heard. It's a place where that question I opened with, can you still make it in America, is very real. As with most questions, the only way to get the answer is to go out and ask. Yes, Michigan Avenue. Just around the corner from the hotel that I stayed at last night is something of a Chicago institution.
This place must be famous. There's a sign on the sidewalk that says World Famous Billy Goat Tavern and Grill. Oh, that's awesome. Look at that.
It's been there since 1934, and according to waiter Cottrell Payne, at least, it's weathered the ups and the downs of the economy pretty well, thanks to locals and tourists alike.
Well, no, you get to meet everybody, you know, all type of different characters, blue-collar workers.
Who else you get? You get the financial district types in here?
Sometimes.
Payne's been happy doing his job for the past 23 years, because for him, it's less about making it and more about doing what it takes to be happy.
A burger and a smile and a beer, you know?
I'll buy that. I got to have a burger and a beer, man. What do you have when you come here? You have the double cheeseburger?
Usually I have the double cheeseburger with bacon.
Oh, with bacon? I didn't know there was bacon.
Yeah, you can add bacon.
We got Samantha Eccles on her dinner break from Walgreens. It's right upstairs. Are you making it in America?
Not really. I always feel that most people are one paycheck away from being homeless. You know what I mean? If you miss a paycheck or, you know, something happens and you have to use money for something else other than bills, it's no telling what might happen.
Which is what? Tell me where you are right now. You live in paycheck to paycheck?
Paycheck to paycheck.
That paycheck to paycheck thing isn't limited to just a photo tech at Walgreens either. Kimberly Hibbard was at the bar. She's having a drink with some friends. Anybody here living paycheck to paycheck?
Yes.
Really?
Yes. Yes.
I'm living paycheck to paycheck. I'm an attorney. People forget about the loans that I had to take out, which were astronomical. Am I relatively privileged? Yes. But I worked really hard and took out a lot of debt to get where I'm at, and I'm still living paycheck to paycheck in a studio apartment. I'm not living glamorously paycheck to paycheck.
There's nothing glamorous about the Billy Goat, nothing at all. But even so, and yeah, maybe this was the beer, but everybody we talked to last night, never mind living paycheck to paycheck and up to their eyeballs in debt, everybody we talked to believed they could make it in America. Long about this point in a Friday broadcast, we wrap up the week that was. Something a little different, though, today as we wrap up a full presidential term and wonder aloud how or even whether you can make it in America nowadays. It's a question that, to be completely honest with you, we stole from that speech the president made on election night.
America, I believe we can build on the progress we've made.
And continue to fight for new jobs.
And new opportunity.
And new security for the middle class.
I believe we can keep the promise of our founders.
The idea that if you're willing to work hard, it doesn't matter who you are.
Or where you come from.
Or what you look like.
Or where you love.
It doesn't matter whether you're black or white or Hispanic or Asian.
Or Native American.
Or young or old or rich or poor.
Able.
Disabled.
Gay or straight.
You can make it here in America.
You can make it here in America.
You can make it here in America, if you're willing to try.
You can make it here in America if you're willing to try.
Here with me today at the National Public Housing Museum in Chicago is the Chicago Tribune's Amit Sachdev, and on the line from New York, Heidi Moore, late of our New York bureau. She's now with The Guardian. Hey, guys.
Hello.
Hi, Kai.
So listen, Heidi, riddle me this. We'll go to the news of the day, and then we'll frame it a little wider. The news from the Republicans today that they're gonna kick the debt ceiling can down the road for 3 months and work on a budget. Are we delivering on a promise for the next 4 years, perhaps?
We're delivering on a promise for the next 3 months, and that grudgingly given. But yeah. We'll take it. I mean, it's really important that at least one lesson of the past 2 years, not the past four, is that maybe we're not willing to pitch the government into crisis for no good reason. If we're at that point, then we can have some hope and change.
Amit, do you think we've learned that lesson?
At least we didn't wait till the 11th hour to kick the can down the road for 3 months.
I know, it's
months.
Almost anticlimactic. Right?
Yes. I was actually kind of very shocked this afternoon when I saw that news. But, I think the House Republicans realize they cannot do that, what they did on New Year's Eve, again, and risk the economy for the next 6 months.
Heidi, do you think this is going to stick, though? When we get a deal eventually in 3 months, will cooler and more rational heads prevail?
No, I don't think that will happen. But
right,
I do.
Thanks for coming. Appreciate you being on the show.
But, you know, I think I actually look, a cynic would read it this way, and I am one of those cynics. The Republicans realized that they would get blamed for not doing this, for dragging the economy through the mud. One of their major financial donors said as much. And so they were scared. They've been doing a lot of things out of fear. And so we're not in a place where logic and rationality are ruling yet. We're in a place where, you know, fear is ruling, but at least it's fear on the right side.
All right. There's other news today, actually, back from that place where fear was rampant. 2007-2008, Amit, the Federal Reserve released the transcripts of its meetings back in the fall of 2007, at which members of the board that runs the American economy, in essence, said, oh, yeah, no, we're not worried about subprimes. Everything's fine.
Yeah.
Hello?
I'm not surprised. I mean, these are the best. Yes, they're the best economists in the world, probably. But everybody seemed to miss what was right in front of us.
What does it say, though, the event that torpedoed the economy these past 4 years was basically ignored by the best and brightest we have?
I don't know if it was ignored. I don't know if they saw that. I mean, the data was coming at them so fast back then, but I think the Fed did take their time in realizing and figuring out finally what was going on, and they waited till the end of middle of 2007 to start lowering interest rates. But
yeah,
it took a while for them to react.
Hey, Heidi, riddle me this: do you believe the Fed has learned its lesson, and that now the not willful blindness, but the ignorance, if you will no longer exist at the Fed?
I think that the Fed has not learned a tremendous amount, but it has learned action. So it hasn't learned, you know, a different approach in terms of its thinking to what's going on in the economy. But it has done so much. And Ben Bernanke spoke this week. He was chipper. He was so proud of everything that the Fed had done to bring us to the point of recovery. So if you have that positive lesson where good things happen, whether or not you actually contributed to them, you feel like you were right. And that's where the Fed's going to be, no matter how bad
I think the Fed. Has really taken quite a bit of action. I mean, their latest step to tie their monetary policy to actual thresholds and unemployment, idea that was
deadlines and inflation.
That idea came out of Chicago, actually. The Fed president here, Charles Evans, I'll give one for Charlie.
Call it the Evans rule.
He has been pushing that for several years, and he finally got lobbied hard enough, and everybody came around.
You call him Charlie?
No, I call him Mr. Evans.
Mr. Evans, yeah, me too. All right. Heidi, last question to you. It's got to be a quickie here. We got like 20 seconds left. With the economy the way it is now, can you make it in America?
I think you can. You know, we have to believe that we can. And that's what sort of the essence of being an American is. Even if everything is against us, we believe we can overcome it. And I don't see why that would change.
Heidi Moore from The Guardian. She's in our New York bureau. Amit Sachdev from the Chicago Tribune. Thanks a lot, you guys. Have a good weekend.
Thank you. You too.
Thank you, Kai.
How do you make it in America?
Making it means playing the game.
It's really rare, I think, for people to work really hard and not achieve something.
Making it so I can make sure my kids have a better education than from where I came from.
How many times have you heard something like that last line? That if you want to make it in America, you got to get yourself an education. Never mind your background or where you came from. The idea in this country has always been that if you work hard enough, if you study hard enough, you can end up doing whatever you want. Whether that's actually true in America's public schools is a whole another question. Chicago, where we are right now, has the third largest public school system in the United States. And the stats this time, I think, speak volumes. 87% of students here are from low-income families. Only 50% of African-American kids here graduate from high school. Elizabeth Dozier is here with us. She is the principal of Fenger Academy High School down on the south side of Chicago. Hi.
Hi, how are you?
Good, I'm good. How are you?
Great.
It's worth pointing out as we start that your school is in a place in this country where it is arguably the hardest to make it. There's poverty, there's crime. I mean, you have the whole smash going on down there.
I will not disagree. That is accurate.
So what do you do? It's your job to get kids up out of that. What do you do?
I think a bunch of things. I think one that we're really, really focused in on is giving them hope. And I think that comes in many forms. I think first it comes in relating to them and building relationships with them and showing them a different way of life and exposing them to something. I think that's critical. I think, too, we have to meet their needs. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of kids in our school, and I think I know a lot of kids in our school don't have their basic needs met. We're talking food. We're talking shelter. It's not uncommon for our students to live in abandoned houses.
A lot of that stuff happens outside the school building. That's an interesting realization, I guess, that you as the principal have to work outside the school as well as in.
There's no way to do this job without it. You can't. Whatever happens outside of the school has a direct impact on what happens inside of the school.
This is a loaded question, but it's the honest question. Do you have enough money to do what you need?
No. We won't. Next year we lose our SIG grant, which was a grant.
Explain what that is.
So it's a grant was given to us by the government, additional $1.8 million in order to provide programs, to provide additional assistance, smaller classroom sizes, programs that our kids need.
Mm-hmm.
And we are going to lose that at the end of this year. But the needs haven't changed. That's what I don't think people really understand is the needs have not changed of our school and school community.
What won't you be able to do because you don't have that money?
We won't be able to have reading programs. On average, 40% of our students come in at a third grade reading level or below. And so instead of just throwing them into a regular English class, we build in reading programs. We won't be able to have reading programs. We know that you just can't have a high school diploma anymore. You have to have something after. So we have a 1 to 50 student to counselor ratio in terms of getting counselors and getting kids to college. And we won't be able to have those things. Plus a whole bunch more, of course.
What do the kids tell you that they want out of your high school?
I think what kids across the country want, they want a future. They want to be able to realize their dreams, no different than anyone else.
How long have you had this job?
3.5 years.
How long is it going to take you to get Fenger where you want it to be?
I think we're on that progression now. If you look at where we are, with 85% decrease in misconducts, more of our freshmen are on track, almost more than doubled. I think that in order to grow into where I'd like to be, I think in the next few years, I think we're already making a huge impact.
Secretary of Education Arne Duncan, famously from Chicago.
Yes.
I imagine you get to chat with him when he comes to town sometime? Come on, you do.
Oh, no, only twice.
Only twice. What does he say to you about the work you're doing?
I think he understands. I think this is the great thing about him is he really understands the work that we're doing out there. He's from Chicago. He's been at the school before. He understands the complexity of the work. He tells us we're doing a good job. We're making some differences in some facts that really matter.
Elizabeth Dozier. She is the principal of Fenger Academy High School. It's down on the south side. Thanks so much for coming up today.
Thanks for having
me. Really appreciate it.
All right.
Coming up, more of our inauguration special from Chicago, Making It in America.
Making it is different for folks, whether it's
hard work, determination.
I came from immigrant parents who, that's sort of the embodiment of why we moved here to come to America, because this is sort of the land where you make it.
But first, let's do the numbers. The Dow Industrials climbed 53 points today, about a third of 1%, closed at 13,649. The blue chips did. The NASDAQ off 1 point, basically flat, 3134, the final number there. The S&P 500 up 5 points, a third percent, 1485 at the bell. For the week gone by, the Dow up 1%, the NASDAQ flat, the S&P 500 barely ticked up tall. Chicago, you may or may not know, grew up as the transportation hub for what was then the American West, and its businesses have moved around some themselves. Boeing came to town just a dozen years ago, down 0.3% today after a nightmare week for its Dreamliner, as you may have heard. United Airlines moved downtown from the suburbs 6 years ago. It fell 3.75% today after a downgrade. Bond prices fell. The yield on the 10-year T-note rose to 1.84%. And you're listening to Marketplace.
Marketplace covers the world of economics. Are you ready for some Freakonomics? We're partnering with the team that writes about the hidden side of everything for a regular Marketplace Freakonomics story, podcast, and more. Just go to freakonomicsradio.com.
From the Marketplace Datebook, here's a look at events coming up Monday. Markets are closed in honor of the Martin Luther King Jr. holiday. Hanging out in Washington? Wander over to the National Archives along the inaugural parade route. Pages of President George Washington's first inaugural address are on view in his handwriting. Analyze that. And it's a symbol of the American dream, owning a car. The latest wheels are on display at the North American International Auto Show, continuing in Detroit. I'm Michelle Phillippe.
This is Marketplace from APM. I'm Kai Rizdahl, and we are live in Chicago today from the National Public Housing Museum, asking this question as we get set for President Obama's second inaugural coming up this weekend. Question is this: how do you really make it in America today? The exhibit up at the museum that I'm standing in the middle of right now is musicians. Barbara Streisand, Lupe Fiasco, Kenny Rogers, all of whom grew up in public housing. Our wealth and poverty reporter Chrissy Clark is here with us as well with the story and the song of a musician whose roots are in public housing too. Hey, Chrissy.
Hi, Kai.
So tell me about the song and this guy.
So it's a song from 1968 by a musician who grew up in Chicago public housing, in fact.
Okay.
His name, he goes by the name of Syl Johnson, mm-hmm. short for Sylvester, and I'm going to play you a little of the song right now.
All right.
You see, I heard somebody say one time, you can make it if you try. Oh, and some of us, we're trying so hard.
We've been hearing that today, right? If you're trying so hard, it's a common sentiment.
Right, and he does it pretty beautifully in that song. So after Johnson sings about how hard he's working, though, listen to what he sings next.
All right.
Oh, something is holding me back. Is it because I'm black?
So this is 1968, right? That's a gutsy thing for a black pop singer to say.
Right. And now most people would look back and probably agree that the answer to his question was, at least in those days, yes. Yeah. But I wondered how a question and a song like Is It Because I'm Black connects to today, which led me to Syl Johnson's Front Gate.
Okay.
It was the coolest welcome I'd ever gotten. He burst out of his door singing.
I'm still in love with you. Okay, how are you?
I'm very good. Johnson's in his mid-70s now. He lives in the same Chicago neighborhood where he grew up. It's called Bronzeville, after the color of people's skin. But Johnson does not live in public housing anymore. He lives in a beautiful two-story home that he built a few years ago.
Step right up.
Though he jokes the Wu-Tang Clan actually built the house after he sued them and a bunch of hip-hop groups for sampling his songs without credit.
Finance this house. Thanks to RZA, they paid me real good.
There are guitars and gold records and a Grammy nomination covering Johnson's walls now. And he's the first to say that ultimately being black did not hold him back, which isn't to say race doesn't matter.
It matters. It means you got to work harder.
To help his family make ends meet, Syl dropped out of high school and started working, washing dishes, driving trucks, leading a band on the side. When he finally did make it in music and put the racial contradictions of the American dream to song, his dreams were starting to come true. not just as a musician.
I'm an entertainer, musician, entrepreneur.
In the 1980s, Johnson invested the money he'd made in the music business to start a seafood restaurant in the south side of Chicago called Solomon's Fishery, named after his dad. He says making it, in business or in music, takes, yes, hard work and perseverance, but something else, too.
You write a song, you better have a song like, is it because some black, a beautiful subject matter.
And if it's a business?
The business, the same, is almost the same as writing. You better have a good idea what you're going to do.
Seizing opportunity wherever it pops up has been another of Johnson's strategies, including, of all things, seizing a rumor circulating around his neighborhood that Church's chicken restaurants had an ingredient that sterilized black men. People stopped going to churches.
So, boom! Oh, they were boarded up churches everywhere in the black neighborhood all across the country. So I had a free opportunity to get the Church's chicken for little or nothing.
After buying up some of the empty storefronts and converting them to fish joints, business took off. In a few years, Syl Johnson was employing more than 100 people.
You can make it if you try. And some of us black people tried hard to make it, and we did. We excelled.
With a success story like Johnson's, this is where you could stop and say, does his old song, Is It Because I'm Black, even still have any relevance?
Oftentimes the answer can still be yes.
Mary Patillo is a sociologist at Northwestern University. She says Johnson's achievements are inspiring, but
that progress of a small component of the black community needs to be put in the context of some really unfortunate developments.
Like the fact that half of African Americans who are born poor stay poor compared to just a third of whites, and that black unemployment is twice as high as white unemployment, and that median incomes are 40% lower. Patillo says these bleak statistics can be driven by a number of things, unconscious racial bias in the labor market and disinvestment in black neighborhoods, including the neighborhood near Racine and South 81st Street, site of Syl Johnson's first fish restaurant before it folded in the 90s. Now it's an empty lot among many.
It was some good fish. They should have kept it around.
One of the only things still open is a liquor store where the clerk works in a bulletproof glass box. Otis Wise just stopped in for an energy drink. He remembers the restaurant. I tell him that the guy who owned it was a singer who wrote a song called Is It Because I'm Black? And I ask Wise what he thinks of that idea.
No, I do not use race or none of that to make an excuse for anything to hold you back. All opportunities is open for everyone.
Then he looked around and added, of course, some people live in neighborhoods like this one, where opportunity's a little harder to find.
Chrissy Clark from our Wealth and Poverty Desk. Chrissy, thanks a bunch.
You're welcome.
All right. The music on the show today, I should tell you, is from musicians who all grew up in public housing. There are few gigs in which it is tougher to make it than in entertainment. Comedy in particular, stand-up to be even more specific. You go up on that stage, you start talking, and you just pray somebody out there laughs. If not, well, the phrase, don't quit your day job, does come to mind. Chicago is one of the hotspots of comedy in this country, Second City, most famously. Sean Flannery is a regular on the comedy club circuit here. Hey, Sean.
Hi, thanks for having me.
You bet. Good to have you with us. You have reached arguably the top or close to the top of your profession here in the city of Chicago, right?
Yeah, I've been lucky. I have two weekly shows here in Chicago, and they routinely sell out. I've been pretty lucky in Chicago.
Have you made it?
You know, I wouldn't quite say I've made it yet. You know, I still work a day job. I work in software engineering during the day. So I basically have two full-time jobs.
You should get a voiceover job. You got the pipe.
Right? I do. Right? Yeah. Well, you should hear me after a few beers. I don't.
that's a whole nother
when I'm
show.
Performing. But yeah, you know, I have two kids and a wife, and I need the day job for health insurance.
What does that say? What does that tell you?
Yeah, you know, I often wonder that, especially in America. You know, I think it was Coolidge who said the business of American people is business, and I wonder how many businesses don't get launched because people are worried. Where am I going to get health insurance from?
Yeah. What was it like the first time you said, I'm going to try to make it as a stand-up comic?
Well, the first time I didn't have a family, and
yeah,
this is before
easier,
I met
right?
my
yeah.
wife. So, and I figured, you know what, I'm going to have some laughs, and it's going to be fun, and we'll see where it leads. And I wasn't expecting to do as well as I did. And then it became, I had to make tougher decisions when I got married and had kids.
What's it going to look like when you make it? I mean, assuming something short of like getting on Leno and stuff.
You know, I don't really need to be rich or famous. I just want to support my family, ideally just writing jokes for a living. So I don't think my day-to-day life would look that different. I would just be clocking into joke writing.
Which is not a bad way to live.
Yeah.
What is your day like? I mean, you literally work 9 to 5 and then you hit the clubs on Tuesdays and Thursdays from...
I'm lucky. I have a much better support system than a lot of people who might be working two jobs. I have a day job that's great. I work in an advertising agency, and they understand my schedule, so I work kind of flex time. I usually go in there a little later, work till about 3, go home, play with the kids, then I go out and do comedy at night.
What has your wife ever said to you about this gig that you got going on?
She has always pointed out that if I ever leave her, she has to get 100% because of how much she works. And that's another part of my support system. I have a great wife, and she's amazing.
Right. How much longer can you do this, though?
Well, that's what I sometimes fear, is that this might be a young man's game.
Only sometimes you fear that?
But, you know, I feel when I get out of bed and I do two jobs because I see it moving in the right direction, and I think it's going to happen eventually, and I think it's going to happen before I'm old.
Okay. This is a tricky question. Define old.
I wonder if I can do this when I turn like 50.
Which might as well be dead, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Dad, comedian, daytime software developer Sean Flannery. His one-man show is called Never Been to Paris. It's running now in Chicago, and we have a clip of it on our website, marketplace.org. Sean, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
See ya.
Marketplace is produced in association with the University of Southern California's Annenberg School for Communication and Journalism.
A final word from Chicago before we pack up and head home, getting us back to the place we started the broadcast this afternoon, the Billy Goat Tavern and Samantha Eccles, the Walgreens photo tech. Among the many other things that we talked about was how she's going to know that she's made it. Here's what she said.
I think you're, I don't know.
Tough question.
I don't know. To me, to know that I've made it is when the bill come in the mail and I can pay it without worrying about, oh God, where I'm going to get this from.
That's it for our special Wealth and Poverty show from Chicago, the National Public Housing Museum. We're all done. Special thanks to Jordan Powers, Nathan Mason, and all the good people at the National Public Housing Museum and the Chicago Department of Cultural Affairs. Our Chicago production team for this Wealth and Poverty show included Millie Jefferson, Nancy Fargali, John Ketchum, Chris Clark, and Jeff Peters. Andrew Dill from WBEZ produced the live stream. Our theme music was composed by BJ Reedham. Marketplace is produced by Sitar Nieves. The executive producer of the broadcast is Deborah Clark. JJ Orr is the vice president and general manager. I'm Kai Rizda. We'll see you back in LA on Monday. Have yourselves a great weekend, everybody. This is APM.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.